This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It looks like the second stage of the Middle East peace talks will begin after Thanksgiving. Now that Palestinians are meeting with Israeli officials, we wanted to get a sense of what's happening within the Palestinian leadership. My guest is Edward Said. He's a professor of English at Columbia University, and he was a member of the Palestine National Council from 1977 until the fall of this year when he resigned for health reasons. The PNC is the Palestinian Parliament in Exile. Said was born in Jerusalem when it was part of Palestine. Today we found out that one of the new faces in the Palestinian leadership might be arrested. Israeli police are recommending that the government arrest and prosecute Hanan Ashrawi for meeting with PLO officials in violation of an Israeli law which prohibits contact with terrorist groups. Ashrawi was an advisor to the Palestinian delegation and served as its spokesperson. I asked Edward Said his reaction to the news that Ashrawi might be arrested.
Well, I just think it's an act of provocation. I mean, there's no reason for suddenly wheeling it in, except that Hanan Ashrawi became very prominent in the last few months, and especially at Madrid, as the kind of symbolic and actual spokesperson for Palestinian nationalism. And second, and perhaps even more important, she has been the person, along with Faisal Husseini, who's been meeting with the Secretary of State in a series of meetings. It's no secret that she and Husseini, but perhaps especially she, has established a special relationship with James Baker. And so the idea is to strike her down, to put her out of commission, and to do so in a way that insults the United States and makes the Palestinians feel angry and vulnerable and despairing of moving forward towards peace. So on all kinds of grounds, in my opinion, it's a stupid and reckless and provocative thing to do. I myself don't think that they will do it. I think they will at the end pull back because I don't think they dare do that. Besides, both the Soviet Union and the United States have committed themselves now to the protection of the Palestinian delegation that went to Madrid from the occupied territories.
What impact do you think it would have on the peace talks if Hanan Ashrawi is arrested?
Oh, I think it would stop them. I think there's no question that it would stop them for a while. I think there would be pressure placed on Israel by the entire international community because she is now an international figure. At Madrid there were well over 5,000 journalists there, and she was the nonstop person on the spot speaking about the Palestinian side of the negotiations. So I don't think in solidarity any of her comrades from the West Bank and Gaza would come forward, sheepishly to proceed to talk with the Israelis. And if they did, it would be only to talk about her release. But I think it ought to be mentioned here that putting her in jail or stopping her from traveling, which is a likely course also, it simply dramatizes further the processes against Palestinians on the West Bank and Gaza. They have no civil rights at all.
Edward Said, you are a member of the Palestine National Council. You know, a lot of people are saying that the PLO is really calling the shots in the way on the Palestinian delegation to the peace talks and that a lot of the statements are cleared by the PLO beforehand. What would you say is the role of the PLO behind the scenes in terms of the Palestinian delegation to the talks?
You see, I think there's a fundamental misconception here. Everybody thinks of the PLO essentially as a group of people sitting in a room and sort of manipulating everything like puppet masters. You have to understand that the PLO is two things. It is, number one, a national authority. It is a kind of symbolic expression of the Palestinian of Palestinian political and national life, given, B, that we are all in exile or under military occupation. I mean, there is no Palestinian sovereignty over anything. So it can only function as the expression collectively of the will of a people. It has institutions in which hundreds of thousands of Palestinians participate, you know, having to do with health and social services and unions of one sort or another and industry and so on. But it's all done in a way that because we don't have territory and we are in exile, has to be, you know, sort of improvised. And it can't be done in a dictatorial way or in a conspiratorial way. It is done by people collaborating with each other, cooperating with each other across boundaries and in ways that are really quite ingenious and inventive. Now, among the people who are represented by the PLO are the the people on the West Bank and Gaza, who, you know, to a huge degree support the PLO. So, and all of us are connected to other Palestinians, whether on the West Bank and Gaza, inside Israel, in Lebanon, and places where Palestinians live, by bonds, not only of national bonds, but, you know, by relationships that are sometimes family, that have to do with associations. For example, Hanan Ashrawi and I are connected not only by the fact that we are Christians, but that we come from essentially the same community, the Protestant community. And I was her dissertation supervisor when she did her doctoral degree in the United States. So these associations, you know, multiplied hundreds, thousands of times, constitute the PLO. So in that respect, you could call it a gigantic fraternal or sisterly organization, if you like, in which Palestinians cooperate.
One of the aspects of the peace conference that has been most commented on by the Western press is the new leadership that emerged at the peace conference, and how most of the Palestinian delegates to the conference were intellectuals, many of them university professors, many of them holding PhDs, and it just put a different face on the Palestinian movement for an independent state, instead of seeing Yasser Arafat, who a lot of people see as a terrorist. You have these obvious intellectuals representing the Palestinian movement. Do you think that this is going to help the Palestinian movement, this new face of Palestinian leadership?
Well, you know, I think most Palestinians think that it's really there's a continuity there rather than a sudden change of personnel. In other words, I think for the first time it is true to say that Palestinians were treated as equals in a discussion about the Middle East on an international level. In other words, although the Palestinian delegation was part of the Jordanian delegation, their status was equal in that they spoke as much as the others. They, you know, spoke for 45 minutes at the opening ceremonies, and they are obviously partners, separate partners, in bilateral discussions with the Israelis. But I think, you know, I think there's been a tremendous exaggeration of the novelty and the new face and all that sort of stuff, and the new pragmatic line, you know, that has been urged by some, especially American journalists, I'd say, you know, like the people in the New York Times and all this sort of thing. The fact is that, you know, aside from Arafat and one or two others, in the PLO, who had in the past represented the Palestinian viewpoint, they're the same people. You know, they're just different faces, but the language is the same. If you look at the PNC declarations of 88 and again of 1991, you'll notice that the language used in there was very similar to the language used in the speeches at Madrid and the statements made by Palestinians, and that a huge number of you know, I'm a professor. You know, there are lots of professors and professionals and doctors and lawyers and so on. So it's essentially the same community, which for the first time has been given an opportunity, you know, to speak its own word, so to speak, and not to be, treated in an adversarial and hostile manner. Because I think a lot of it has to do with Israeli propaganda against the Palestinians, where they've painted Palestinians as a whole people. Now, we're not just talking about the Arafat. We're just talking about anything that Palestinians did. From the Israeli point of view, was terrorist. And what Palestinians have always been doing is resisting occupation and dispossession.
Some of the Palestinians who were in Madrid have already been talking to Israelis for years,
exactly.
not the government representatives, but doves in the Israeli movement.
Right.
And I'm thinking here of Hanan Ashrawi, Sari Nusseibeh.
Well, he wasn't in Madrid, actually. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Faisal Husseini, certainly, yes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Saeb Erekat probably has also had a lot of contact with the Israeli peace movement.
Right.
Now, a lot of people are interpreting the Madrid talks as having been, having achieved a lot in breaking the psychological barrier, because it's the first time that Palestinians and Israelis have really sat down at the table together. Given that a lot of the Palestinians who are there have already been sitting down with Israelis, but not official government Israelis, how much of a psychological barrier do you think was broken? How significant is it?
Oh, I think that's very significant. I mean, I think you're right to say that most of the Palestinians there were people who had participated, for years in dialogues with Israeli doves, members of the peace movement, American Jews who were interested in this process, in this alternative process, than the one of conflict and hostility and killing. That is certainly true. But I think you ought to remember, by the way, that part of the price exacted from the United States by Israel for attending the conference was that people like Hanan Ashari and Faisal Husseini, who have in fact pioneered this process of dialogue and peaceful exchange, were prevented from being members of the delegation. They were consigned to the delegation of advisors and were not allowed to enter the peace palace. So that what you saw of Husseini and Ashari and others was, you know, from another place, forbidden to enter the place in the peace palace in Madrid, because they are residents of Jerusalem, which Israel considers to be its own, and therefore, you know, they can't be there as members of the Palestinian delegation. So I think that point has to be made. But I think it also, the breakthrough is that there were members, in fact, the entire delegation, not that I can be absolutely certain about this, but I think the entire Israeli delegation was a delegation of hardliners. I mean, greater Israel ideologists like Netanyahu and Rubinstein and the others, and of course, above all, Shamir, who represent a point of view that is totally opposed to any sort of Palestinian self-determination and statehood, who were, I think, in the end, obligated to sit there and listen to Palestinians of that stature and eloquence, telling them directly what, and as representatives of the government of Israel, what the Palestinian view on things in general was. And that's what the breakthrough was.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Edward Said. He's a member of the Palestine National Council. He's a professor at Columbia University, the author of several books on various topics, including the Middle East and classical music. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Edward Said, member of the Palestine National Council and a professor at Columbia University. What did you see as a hopeful outcome of the first part of the peace talks?
Well, I think, you know, that the Israelis didn't walk out, I thought was very significant. That in fact, nobody walked out. That there was a lot of challenge, there was a lot of give and take, positive and negative, and that people are staying on. Largely out of curiosity in a way. You know, this is a novel thing. And it's got to be said about Baker and Bush that they achieved something in bringing people there. And just the sort of the drama, the staging of enemies talking to each other, although a lot of the time at each other, is an extraordinary step. There's no doubt about that at all. And it was done in the full light of day. And it wasn't. I mean, there have been many meetings between Israelis and Arabs of various kinds. You know, secret meetings in disguise. And you know, the Jordanians and the Syrians and the Israelis have met for years in secret. Perez has met with many Arab leaders and so on and so forth. But this was an open thing. And I think it established the precedent that nobody can now hide behind ideological formulas, let's say, whether Arab or Israeli, as an excuse for not meeting. Now, so that's the positive side, and I think it's very important. But we paid, as Palestinians, a very heavy price. I mean, there were all these rules that we couldn't bring this kind of person, and this person had to be, etc., you know, and Baker negotiated that very skillfully, and I think to be a little self-congratulatory here as a Palestinian, I thought we got through those hurdles, all of them placed by Israel, quite brilliantly. I mean, with the idea of an advisory delegation and another delegation of people and so on and so forth, so that there was a lot of Palestinian presence there, which I think, you know, dominated the scenes, and for the first time, Palestinians who are the underdogs and the weakest party there, obviously, really came out quite brilliantly. But it does raise the question as to what happens next, rather severely, because nothing is very clear.
It sounds now that the Palestinian people are pretty divided. I mean, within the Palestinian movement, you have radical Islamic factions, radical political factions, and those radical groups opposed Palestinian participation in the peace talks.
Yeah, but I don't think they represent, a tremendously large group of people. I mean, I think most of the figures that I've seen, and having spoken to some of the people who have to deal with this problem on the West Bank and Gaza, and others, in independent observers, I'd say that organizations like Hamas, for example, and all of the Islamic groups, I mean, there are two, three, really, at best represent something like 10 to 15% of the population.
I think I have to put you on the spot here. I believe that one of the incidents in question about whether Hanan Ashrari met with the PLO or not had to do with whether or not she attended meetings of the Palestine National Council recently. You attended some of those meetings. Would you comment on that? Was she there?
Well, I think I'd better let her answer that myself. I mean, I've known, as I told you, I've known Hanan for a long time, and she's a good friend and, as I say, a former student, and I've met her consistently over the years, so there's no reason for me not to have met her.
At the council meeting?
Well, whatever. I mean, whatever the site. I mean, I meet her, she comes to my house, and she's a friend and a former student, so I've met her in all sorts of... Now, as I say, I was not at the council meeting in question in Algiers in late September, but I certainly met her in the court, and I'm not a member of the PLO, so it's not an issue for me, But I mean, certainly she is a very widely known and respected and loved figure. So, and she's met lots of Palestinians.
How come you're not a member of the PLO?
Well, see, the PLO is not a membership organization. I mean, the members of the PLO are the people who work for the PLO, who are employees of the PLO. And I've never been an employee of the PLO. I believe, as all Palestinians do, that the PLO represents me. But in the strict sense of the word, I'm not a, sort of a card-carrying member.
Well, Edward Said, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Edward Said is a former member of the Palestine National Council and professor of English at Columbia University.